Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, June 21st, 2014. This is episode 1093. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and smartphones and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number if you want to ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion. 888-827-5536 at 33 and a third after the hour. Our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, will show up and we'll talk about surround sound or big screens or whatever's going on in home theater these days. Tell you what's going on in smartphones. Amazon entered the fray. Jeff Bezos says, we've been working on this for 4 years. 4 years. And in fact, you know, it's funny because the rumors that Amazon was going to do a phone have been going on for so long, about 4 years, that I was starting to think, yeah, it's just a silly rumor. And then there was a rumor in the fall or winter that they were going to do a 3D phone. And that's when I really thought, yeah, right. But then they put out a video, you might remember this, a couple of weeks ago, inviting everybody to come to the event June 18th in Seattle. And in the video, they didn't show the product, whatever it was, but everybody was looking at it and tilting their heads. And so everybody thought, well, it is a 3D phone. I guess you could call it a 3D phone, but it's not 3D in the way that a movie or a TV is 3D. It's what Amazon calls dynamic perspective. And it's a gimmick, obviously, but it's a little bit better than 3D. I was a little worried about 3D. I don't want parts of my phone to come at me to appear closer to me than the phone is. And that's what 3D is, you know, different image in each eye and so forth. But and in order to do that without glasses takes, you know, considerable technological effort, or it's really junky. It's like those old postcards that you'd tilt and that have two different pictures. This is kind of interesting. They have four, I mean, again, like I said, gimmicky, but they've gone to great lengths for this gimmick. They have four cameras on the front of the phone, one in each corner, and those four cameras do one thing only. They see where your head is. Not only what angle it is and how, you know, where it is relative to the front of the phone, but how distant it is as well. They position your head, and then they modify the image on the phone so that as you move your head, it appears that objects in the foreground are moving more than objects in the background. That's perspective. So it's like the real world where you could kind of tilt your head around a little bit and see a little more of something. Maybe this, you know, on a map, they showed how it would work on a map. They show how it would work in some video games where they had a little platformer game where you're running along and you could kind of look around stuff on the game. I think that's interesting. It's just a gimmick, but it's interesting. There are some things that are less gimmicky in this phone. In fact, while spec-wise, it's very much like any other, you know, smartphone. It's 4.7 inches, maybe a little smaller than the current crop of hot phones, but bigger than an iPhone. And I think it's just about the right size, 4.7 inches. It's a high-def screen, yeah, you know, quad-core, Snapdragon 800 chips and the graphic, all the stuff that everybody has. Pretty good camera. I think one of the things Amazon realized is that a camera is more and more a big part of your smartphone. So it has a 13-megapixel camera. That's kind of the, you know, the top-of-the-line phones all have that. But it has two things I really like. It's a f2.0, which is a very fast aperture. It means it should do well in low light. Not unique, but among the best. I don't think anybody's better than that. And optical image stabilization, which is great. It's comparable to the phones Nokia's putting in their high-end phones. Our cameras, they're putting in their high-end phones. But, you know, that's good. And they did throw in something nobody else does. Unlimited storage for your photos. So when you take a picture on your Amazon phone, by the way, they call this the Fire Phone. Good name. When you take a picture on your Fire Phone, It is automatically, should you choose, automatically uploaded to the Amazon servers, and it's stored forever there for free. Unlimited. Take all the pictures you want. I like that. I like that. AT&T only. Available July 25th. If you can order it now, pre-order it now on Amazon, but you'll get it July 25th. $200 with an AT&T contract. But if you're, but you get a year of Amazon Prime, which is worth $100. And if you're already an Amazon Prime member, you get your membership extended for a year. So, you know, that's not exactly giving you $100 off, but it's something. And if you're an Amazon Prime member, I guess it is. What else? It has a couple of very unusual things. One is the May Day button. I think this is great. And I think this may end up being, I ordered a unit and I'll let you know next month. But this may be the phone I start recommending for first time smartphone buyers, because the May Day button is such a good idea. And they've done it first on their Kindle Fire HD, their tablet. You tap a button and within 15 seconds, and when they say that, but they mean it, it's been 9 seconds. They put out the stats. 9 seconds, a representative will come online. And you'll see his face or her face, and they'll say, hey, what can I do? What can I help you with? Now, nominally, this would be things with the phone, AT&T says. And by the way, you can also contact AT&T support that way. But, you know, they've received 35 marriage proposals. They've helped people order pizza. Apparently, Domino's the favorite. They do unusual things, and I would imagine that they might have a lifeline to 911 and a crisis line. But mostly what it's, I can't figure out how to turn off the ringing. It's driving me crazy, and they'll help you do that. And if it's like the May Day on the tablet, they didn't say this, but if it's like the May Day on the tablet, the representative can actually kind of reach into your phone and do it for you, show you how to do it, which is cool. The other thing that is very interesting and may scare brick-and-mortar merchants is this Firefly technology. There's a dedicated button on the phone. Whenever you're somewhere, anywhere, and you press that button, the camera will pop up and it'll capture an image of whatever you're looking at. If it's a thing you can buy, it'll show you how to buy it on Amazon, like with one click. Yeah, of course, that's smart, right? But if it's a painting, it might say who the painting's by and what the name of it is. If it's a building, it might tell you where you are. It apparently recognizes a huge variety of things, not just for buying, but for informational purposes. The Firefly button, that's interesting. You know, they spent an hour and a half talking about this phone. Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon. There's one thing they didn't mention. I was kind of surprised. They didn't talk about making phone calls at all. At all. Do we call these phones anymore? Do you still use your smartphone to make phone calls? I think many of you probably do. I don't so much. I send a lot more text messages and other kinds of messages, but I don't so much. Maybe these aren't phones at all. They're what they've always wanted to be, which is a computer in your pocket, which can now take pictures of anything. They didn't say, and I bet it doesn't take pictures of people and tell you who that is. I would love that. But that's, people are a little sensitive about that, because you could, you know, use it to say, who's that? Oh, she's cute. Who's that? But I would just, add, you know, as you get older and you walk around, I know that person. What the heck is his name? He's coming closer. What's his? I can't remember who he is. Wouldn't that be great if you just surreptitiously press the Firefly button and says, that's your best friend, Joe. Oh, hi, Joe. That's what I need. They didn't mention the phone calling at all, though. So a Me Too phone. It is running on Android, but they don't mention Android particularly because it's really Amazon's version of Android, which they now call Fire OS, Fire OS 3.5. It's so different from, it has the Android underneath, but it's so different from an Android phone that it's not even related. You can't buy stuff at the Google store. You don't get Google Maps. You don't get Google stuff at all. Google Now, none of that stuff. You get all Amazon services. And that's the kind of a sacrifice. Depends on how tightly integrated you are into the world of Google. So now what we have really is four different competing ecosystems, each trying to pull you in and keep you there. Amazon's now joined Apple. Of course, Apple's all about living in the Apple world. Google and Android, living in the Google world, buying your music from Google, your TV, your music, and living in the Microsoft world. And they all kind of keeping themselves. That's the Amazon phone. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Do you think it's interesting, Heather, that they didn't? You are, after all. By the way, excuse my voice. I'm losing it, I think. You are, after all, the Phone Ranger. Do you think it's odd that they didn't mention the fact that the new Amazon Fire phone is not a... You can't make... I presume you can make calls, but they didn't talk about that. I think it's because... Well, one thing you could say is, well, obviously it's a phone. What are you going to say about a phone? It makes calls.
That's become the side feature, hasn't it?
But I don't think it's... Yeah, I don't think it's a primary feature anymore.
Because we're all texting and figuring out what restaurant we want to go to. And, oh my God, I heard a song in the store. who is this? It's amazing.
It does that. That's part of the Firefly button. If you press the button and you're watching TV, you hear a song, you see something you want, you see something you want to know what it is, you press that button and it just says... Apparently... Now, I haven't played with it. Nobody has... some of the journalists at the event played with it and said it was quite impressive, that it was almost 100% accurate.
So you can say, phone, deliver me someone tall, dark, and handsome now.
Yeah, take a picture of a guy you like. Say, I like one of those, please.
Yeah.
An extra large or whatever. can you give me a medium? And, you know, it's only a matter of time before Amazon starts selling those guys, too.
I can't wait.
And with Amazon Prime, he'll be delivered to your door the next day.
With flowers in his hand. Oh, cute.
That's
the future.
That's the gift wrapping. You have to check that gift wrap box. So Heather has been lining up calls for us, getting ready to... Because this is a call-in show. It's no point in me just... I could, and I have. It wasn't fun, but once the phones just stopped working and I had to just talk for hours... It was an hour, but it felt like a day. But usually we like to take calls. Who should I start with on this one?
Let's start with Tom, because that's a good, easy one. I have a difficult one for you coming up, however.
Oh, you're going to just slowly ramp up the pressure, is that
I
it?
I am.
All right. It's like the World Cup of phone calls. We're in the qualification group here with Tom in Warren, Ohio. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Leo. How you doing? You watching any World Cup?
Oh, no. You know, it's so funny because I don't watch any soccer for 4 years, and then the World Cup comes, and I'm like a fanatic.
I
love
it. Was a great goal today by Messi in Argentina, Iran.
I missed it. I was on the way in here. It was 0-0 when I left, and then the game was over when I got here, and I was disappointed I missed it. But they had to win that one.
Stoppage time.
Yeah, it was in stoppage. Wow.
Yeah. It was like 91st minute, and outside the penalty box, 18, 20 yards away.
Oh, how exciting. Now, do you think this conversation, I mean, there's certainly, it's trendy to say, oh, I can't stand soccer. But I think that there's something about the World Cup, especially in Brazil, that just kind of gets you excited. If you're not watching, probably should be, but don't watch it right now.
Great soccer country. I don't know how well they prepared for the event, though.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like they did a great job preparing, but they're rabid soccer fans.
Oh, that's what makes it exciting. What can I do for you today, John? Tom, I'm sorry.
This is Tom, yeah. I'm considering getting a dual-band router, a replacement to mine, and I heard that Asus, I think it was Patrick Norton, talked about it, and I've seen some good reviews on it, and a dual-band router is what I want to get to try to get a better signal throughout my house and in my backyard.
Routers these days are a commodity. You know what I mean when I say that? Like corn and soybeans and pork bellies.
There's a lot of cheap ones out there.
They're commodities because they don't seem to be much differentiated. There's brand names, Linksys and Netgear and Asus and D-Link and Buffalo, but they all seem to be about the same. In fact, there is a little dirty little secret. They are kind of all the same because they all are running the same chipsets. Now, one thing that Asus has done, which I think is interesting, is they said, we're going to get out of the firmware business. And we're going to start using these open source firmware solutions that we have recommended for some time, the DDWRT. And I don't know if all of them have this or not, but if they do, that's a selling point as far as I'm concerned. Because the problem with routers at this point is the companies that make them, they're such a cheap commodity product, don't bother upgrading them. And so as a result, if there's a bug found or a flaw, and we've been finding a lot lately in the router, then you don't get an upgrade because they say, well, just buy a new one. And I don't think that's a good solution since most people don't know there's a bug. They don't bother upgrading, and then they're vulnerable. So I think an Asus is a very good choice. I don't have any problem going with that. Dual band is interesting as well. Dual band, you know, the Wi-Fi's a really good example of how getting the government and the FCC out of the way can be helpful. The FCC decided, you know, normally they regulate all the frequencies, all the spectrum of the airwaves. We the people own the airwaves, and the government organization in charge of keeping that all sorted out is the FCC, of course. So they assign licenses to radio stations to use certain bands and TV stations and emergency radio and stuff. But they decided, and I think this was actually quite wise of them, to leave some unregulated bands. One of these was the 2.4 gigahertz band. They said, you know what, we're going to keep this band open so that anybody who wants to make something can just use it and doesn't have to get it, go through this big, arduous, and expensive certification process. You still have to certify for FCCB and things like that. You can't interfere. But basically, you can use this for anything. And if it weren't for that, I don't know if we'd have Wi-Fi. But the fact that they could, that people could innovate on this frequency and play with it and do stuff, that's so cool. In fact, there are other unregulated spectrum, including the 5 gigahertz band, which is, so when you get a dual band router, you get something that works on 2.4 gigahertz. These are the frequencies, and 5 gigahertz. When I say band, it's not just exactly 2.40000. It's actually an area around 2.4 and an area around 5. The reason dual band can be useful, there are a couple of reasons. And this, some of this has to do with physics. The higher the frequency, so 5 gigahertz is higher than 2.4, that means the smaller the waves and the more likely they'll bounce off stuff. Normally, you don't want stuff to bounce off. A television signal, TV, is down in the megahertz range, and that goes through walls. That's why you can get TV reception in your house with little rabbit ears and so forth. But the higher frequencies, the microwave frequencies, tend to bounce off things. And 5 bounces off things much more readily than 2.4. That can be an advantage if you're in an apartment building where there's lots of signals. 5 is a good choice for two reasons. One, most people are still using 2.4, so there's fewer signals at 5. But also, your neighbors aren't going to interfere as much because it's more likely just to stay in their apartment. So 5 is a good choice if the band is crowded or you want to kind of eliminate interference from other devices. Also, because 2.4 is the first and most easily used unregulated frequency, it's jammed. Your microwave is 2.4. Your cell phone is often 2.4. Baby monitors. There's all sorts of stuff at 2.4. So using 500 5 gigahertz is probably a good idea. As long as you don't want it to go through walls. So dual band gives you the choice, and that's nice. I use 5 gigahertz at home almost exclusively, and I find it's really great. And that Asus is a good choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson is here, home theater guru. And he is going to be taking over for me in 2 weeks when we go on vacation. So
yep, July 4th weekend.
Yay. 5th and 6th, is it, I think?
Yep, 5th yep. and 6th. Yep. Yep. We're coming up a day early. We're going to the Oakland A's game on July 4th.
Oh, you know what? They have great fireworks. You're going to enjoy it. Yeah, really great fireworks.
Should be great. Should be loads of fun.
Scott, is
and
he...
And then I get to come and sit in your studio.
Yes, you get to sit on my ball. Do we roll a chair in for you when we...
No. I sit on the ball.
You do the official thing.
I do the official thing. Absolutely. It's very comfortable. It's great. It keeps me awake. I roll around. It's really good.
People say it's surprisingly comfortable. As if it is. I didn't expect this to be comfortable at all. So Scott is the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum, avsforum.com. He's also our host of Home Theater Geeks. Great show. I just watched it. So you're on Friday now? Thursday?
No, Thursday.
Thursday, okay.
2:30 to 3:30 Pacific, 5:30 to 6:30 Eastern. Been having some great, great guests on lately. Last 2 weeks were some consultants that work with SMPTE, the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers, talking all about the standards that they are working on now for the future of television. Because as you know, we're coming up to a new television system, really. We've had HD, believe it or not, for almost 10 years.
Wow.
High definition for 10 years.
Well, it's time we got rid of that. What's next?
Well, what's next is ultra high definition. You know, I mean, the HD market has become pretty saturated. Well over, I think, 70-80% of U.S. homes now have an HD TV.
Wow.
And so the TV manufacturers, of course, now need to find something to sell more TVs. They tried 3D. That didn't work too well.
But you know what 3D did that was kind of interesting is in order to do 3D, of course, you have to have two different images, one for the left, one for the right eye. And right. And these 3D TVs, the way they handled it was, in some cases, making a 4K display, right?
Well, no, not up until recently.
I thought that that was kind of, that kind of stimulated the 4K market was that they kind of did a double res display so they could do that.
Well, they didn't up till recently. Oh, okay. And very recently they've started to do that, because you're right, and particularly with passive glasses, you still have to wear glasses.
You always will. Don't count.
Well,
on.
That's not true. No. There is an auto stereo, what's called an auto stereo or glasses free 3D system. There are two of them, one from Dolby and one from a company called Stream TV Networks. Their technology is called Ultra D. And both Mark Henninger, my colleague at AVS Forum, and I are both very impressed with it. Mark actually lived with one in his house for a couple of months.
Really?
Yeah. And that does use a 4K panel because, really, when you have to divide the image up for the two eyes in a passive way, which glasses-free 3D is, also these polarized glasses like the ones you get in the theater, it cuts the vertical resolution in half. And so if you have double the resolution that you ultimately need to see high definition, then cutting it in half brings you back to normal full HD, and it works very well. Up until now, 1080p, these high def TVs with 1920 pixels across by 1080 pixels up and down, had to divide that vertical resolution in half with the passive glasses.
So you had
only
half,
saw 540 lines.
Yeah, it wasn't HD.
Well, yes, and yet there's a thing that happens in the brain, which is very mysterious, to me anyway, kind of fuses those two images together, and you do perceive more detail than you would expect with only 540 lines of resolution going up and down. So it's better than it sounds, but it's not as good as it should be. Let's put it that way.
That's that's the slogan, I think, on the ads. Better than it sounds, but not as good as it should be.
good catch line.
Yeah.
Now, to tell you how much 3D has actually dimmed, if you will, Vizio, this great company that is coming up gangbusters with TVs, has dropped 3D from all of its 2014 TVs.
I told you.
You told us. You were right.
Because nobody wanted it. But, you get it. Often you get it at no additional cost.
That's right. It has become a feature that you get at virtually no cost. And there are people who like it. I've gotten plenty of emails. Richard Bixler wrote me and said, I'm starting to really like 3D, and 3D Blu-rays are coming down in price. So what should I get? And I would have said Vizio, but I can't this year. This Ultra D technology will be in the retailers, sometime this year, probably towards the end of the year. And I would definitely look at that if you like 3D. The problem, though, with it is that everything is in 3D. And if you turn the 3D off, it might do some weird things to 2D images.
Oh, that's
so
terrible. Nobody's going to buy
kinda,
that.
That's kind of terrible. Yeah, I agree.
So we're now, looking forward, as I said we should, to high-resolution 4K Ultra HD. And what about frame rate, higher frame rates?
Well, that's certainly one thing that Paul Briscoe talked about last week on Home Theater Geeks, is that when you get to 4K, this ultra high resolution that we're coming to, we're there now, but it'll be coming more and more in the coming years. You want to sit closer to the TV. You have more of the TV in your peripheral vision. And he pointed out that in your peripheral vision, things aren't the same as what when you're looking straight ahead. And one of the things that's different is that even at 60 cycles or 60 frames per second, things can look kind of stuttery and jittery in your peripheral vision. And so what he wants to see is content at 120 frames per second, which would then make the peripheral, the images that you see in your peripheral vision look smoother and more like real life. And that's ultimately the goal of any TV system, and Ultra HD more so than anything else, is you want it to be like looking out a window. It's so funny, when HD first came out, everyone said, oh, it's like looking out a window. And in many ways, it is. And now that 4K is here, it's like, oh, HD, that's just crap. You know?
It's looking at a dirty window.
It's out of a dirty window, yeah. Here, we've got a real window to look out. And they're recommending that you sit closer to the TV as well, right, so that you get like 60 degrees of field of view. You have this TV, and that's like truly immersive, and it's wonderful. It just looks great. But who's going to sit that close to their TV?
So the question everybody asks me is, should I buy a 4K TV today?
My answer is basically no. And the reason is, the TV manufacturers are coming out with these ultra-high-definition TVs with a bunch of pixels, much four times the number of pixels, right, of HD, right, but they don't have the other elements that are going to be so important, like increased dynamic range, greater color gamut, 120 hertz frame rate. And those are going to be coming in the next year or two. So I hesitate to say don't do it, because early adopters are really important in our industry.
Yeah, yeah, we want you to go out and buy them all. Please,
go out and buy
everybody.
The ball now, yes, because then it'll be cheaper for the rest of us.
you're doing your bit for mankind.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Is I guess the question is, if you're buying today, understand that if you buy today, there's not a lot of content. And just as there was in early days of HD, you're an early
That's
adopter.
Right.
But the real question is, are you buying prematurely in terms of the standard? And is the standard going to change?
Yes, it is. And that is mainly my point, is that we're going to see things like high dynamic range, and then following that is going to be the content that is mastered in high dynamic range.
But so the TVs will get better, but will I not be able to watch new content on the TV?
No, you'll be able to watch new content.
Okay. That's Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com, home theater geek, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. You'll be hosting the show.
You bet.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. So it's not like TVs that we buy today are going to be obsolete next year.
No.
They're going to be better next year, so you may regret it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That is more to the point.
Yeah.
And one of the other things we talked about on the show last week was, how do you then take the new content that will be coming in the next year or two and essentially downscale it in some sense to the older 4K TVs that won't have the high dynamic range and so on, that living with two different color gamuts, ranges of color, or two different dynamic range specifications. This is an important problem, and there's going to be a ton of legacy HD TVs out there that are going to receive this new content. And what are they going to do with it? It's the same thing that the early 4K TVs are going to do with it, which is to essentially repurpose, downscale is one way to say it, the new content so that it fits within the standards that the older TVs were built to. And that's what's going to happen with those.
Yeah.
Netcompoop says, your mother told you to sit back from the TV so she could see it without your head being in the way. That was the real reason. It wasn't, you'll go blind. Hey, Tech Dino, how you doing? Beatmaster. 4K for TVs is one thing that relies on screen size and distance. That's absolutely true. But projectors should only be bought if they offer 4K. Should only be bought when they offer 4K. No? Well, no. They're still going to be pretty expensive. And, you know, truth be told, 1080p, the current resolution standard, 1920 by 1080, looks just fine. Even on a big screen. When you go out to the theater, when you go out to the movies in a commercial cinema and you're watching a digital projector, which 90-some percent of theaters now use, it's all 2K. It's all basically the same resolution, a little bit more, but not much, just a few percent more than what you see on your TV at home. And do you see pixels? Well, if you sit in the first row, you probably do. But if you sit at a reasonable distance back from the screen, you don't. So pixel resolution by itself, to me, is one of the least important aspects of this new TV system that's coming down the pike. What's much more important is what I've said before, high dynamic range, the difference between the darkest and the brightest part of the picture. Right now, we content is mastered or graded to a peak white level of what's called 100 nits. It doesn't matter what that is. It's a measure of brightness. Most TVs these days can reach several hundred nits, up to 1,000 at most, by the Sharp. The Sharp used to have an LCD TV called, from the Elite line, which a name they borrowed, bought from Pioneer. It reached 1,000 nits. But the content that's coming in was graded in a mastering suite to 100 nits. So expanding that, making it brighter, is only distorting what the content creator intended. Now, in the future, we will have content that's graded for 1,000 nits or even 10,000 nits. And when that happens and you see that on a display that can reproduce it properly, your jaw will hit the floor. I got to tell you, it's amazing. It's amazing. You just look at that and you go, I can't believe it. It really is like looking out a window. Much more than any TV system today. Now, there are some problems with building displays that can do that. Dolby has a prototype called the Proteus? Pulsar. It's called the Pulsar. That goes to 4,000 nits, it's water cooled.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you, Scott. You know, I was just reading an article about YouTube. They're starting to make deals in Europe and around the world with cable companies so that YouTube shows up on your TV set as your cable, from your cable provider. And the article led somewhere in Poland, a grandmother is seeing Oppo Gangnam Style for the first time. That sounds old, doesn't it? And how, I mean, that's, it's, I think things are speeding, either I'm getting older or things are speeding up or both. But doesn't it feel like these fads, they're coming and going faster? Maybe not. I think that's something that happens with old age. I'm just you kids, you got a new fad every year. I don't understand it. I can't keep up with you, kid. Do you know what the fad is on the iPhone? Did you get one of these? Yo. Did you get the yo?
I did not.
Did I yo you?
I feel like such a loser.
Are you yoing? Anybody in the studio yoing?
That's a great idea.
It's a terrible idea.
Oh, yeah?
So it was an Israeli startup. Actually, the Israeli company is a very well-known company making mobile apps. But the CEO told one of his programmers, I want a simple way to ping my wife just to say, I'm thinking of you or I need you. It's too complicated. I want to send her a text message. Too much work. It really, that's where we're going. This is that, you know, how can I make it easier? So he made an app. It's just you should see this thing. I'll have to put it on my iPad.
Oh my god,
see.
This is incredible!
It's just got a big colored bar with the name of somebody you know, and when you tap it, the other person's phone goes yo. It's the most annoying. That's all. There's no further communication, and then they get a button on their phone and they tap it and it goes yo back to you. That's the whole. That's it.
Oh, that's so true.
They've already raised $1 million. It's number one on the App Store, on the Apple App Store. It's like, what? I thought Poke was stupid. This is shorter than Poke.
But I'm seeing this guy, and I feel like, gosh, I wish I just knew that he was thinking about me once in a while. He's like,
see?
So busy, and he's not knowing me. Or just a smiley face, something.
It's like a smiley. Yo. It can mean anything. Yo can mean anything, right? Apparently, in Israel, it even means something. Yo. So it's the strangest thing. And all I put it on the phone because Sarah and Amber were talking about it on our show. We have a show called The Social Hour, and it's a bad name because it sounds like it's a coffee clutch, but really they're talking about social media and Apple and stuff like this. And they were talking about this, and Sarah said, "Well, I wonder if I can yo." Oh yeah, there's the chief twit. That's me. She yo'd me. I'm watching the show, and it goes yo. So I yo'd her back yo. Unfortunately, she revealed my yo name to the world, and all for, even at the opera. Yo.
So now you're a yo-yo.
Yo-yo. It's a fascinating world we live in where you can make $1 million, literally. This they've funded it up to a tune of $1 million and be number one. Now it's a free program, so I don't see any way of making money. But so Twitter became huge because they limited your message to 140 characters. But apparently two is better. Yo. like the big thing. All the kids are doing it.
Under the label of the less said, the better.
Yeah, yo. And yo is completely neutral, right? It could be negative. It could be positive. It could be anything. It's like a poke. But a poke sounds a little... A poke is like like offensive. Yo is just yo. Mm-hmm. A poke is like, stop poking me. But yo is just like, yo. What a world. What a world. What a world. Moving on. More calls. You said it's going to get harder. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Sarah's next in Oxnard, California. Let's see. Hi, Sarah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
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 Welcome. Well,
thank you.
Yeah.
I was taking, I had taken Microsoft Office when it was 2000.
Yeah.
So I did
14 years ago. 2000 yeah. Sounds modern. 14 years ago. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I decided to update my skills and take a Microsoft Word and Excel 2010 class.
Okay, good. You're getting closer. We're up to 2013 now, you know, but that's good. That's, you're only one generation behind. So what happened?
Well, they said that I could, within eight classes, I could review... Office or Microsoft.
Yeah. How proficient were you with Office 2000?
Okay.
Yeah, so there is a big shift because what Microsoft has done is they've changed the user interface there. And it was kind of controversial when they did it to this ribbon thing. And the reason they did it is they said, well, people who use Word don't use 90% of the commands because they don't even know they exist. So we're going to create a new user interface, which is a giant ribbon that shows more of the commands, so it improves your discovery of other things. Did you find Did you find it confusing?
Yeah. There are buttons for every aspect now. Before, you'd had to burrow through and know where the functions were.
Right. Microsoft didn't want any more burrowing. But,
yeah.
But it takes up a huge amount of space on the screen. You can turn the ribbon off, but that's the user interface now. Yeah.
It's true, but... my problem was that...
The guy who invented the ribbon, they rewarded him. His name was Steven Sinofsky, and they gave him... They said, you did such a good job with the ribbon. We're going to give you the new Windows. And he created Windows 8, which is the most hated version of Windows ever. So he's really got a good... And then he was fired. So he's got a great track record.
Oh, great.
So what can I do to help you with your pain?
Well, I was taking the class, and apparently I could relearn Word and Excel within eight lessons for each application. Word, eight lessons.
That's a little ambitious, but okay.
Yeah, and I felt I could do it, and I did finish the Word one within the first eight lessons, and then for the rest of it, I was going through Excel. But each time I was going through stuff, I noticed the instructor, she likes to play on the computer and do her own thing unless someone asks her a question. But every time
Wait a minute. She's teaching the class, but she's not really teaching the class unless you ask a question. Oh, so you have some workbook you're working through.
It's really fantastic. They have a workbook, and then they have a Flash application. It runs a movie, and you can just scroll, go down the list.
How much did you pay for these classes? Let me ask you what your question is before we run out of time.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, it's okay. So that part's great, but and then I get to do my homework on the actual Word and Excel. Okay, so but then I was having problems, and each time I noticed that when I had a problem with it, I would see her looking at me, and it got me to feeling paranoid because I was wondering, is she doing something to stop it? Because she said she was reliant on people repeating the class or coming back again, and that it was hard to fill the morning.
You think she, in order to make cause you to fail, she's sabotaging you?
I would come into class early so that I could try and put more time into it, but she spent all the time telling me about her family history.
Yeah. So again, what's your question?
How can I tell if she was doing something?
Doing something to your computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can't tell. What do you think she was doing?
Well, halting the application.
Like making it fail, making it crash. Yeah, she can do that. Look, you're on her net. I don't know if she is. You're on her network. So, yeah, I mean, it depends on how sophisticated this setup was. It is possible. In fact, this is a kind of a neat way to teach, to have a system. You're sitting at the front of class. I gather you can't see her screen, where she sees every single screen in the classroom and small screens on her big screen. And she can. And this is not an uncommon setup. I don't know how sophisticated, again, this school was. But then she can zoom in on one, and she can interact with that screen. And she could say, "No, I see you're having trouble here, Sarah," and she could do something. So, I don't know if she's sabotaging you, but I'll tell you what: why don't you get a book instead and try that at home? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
So yeah, hey chat room, happy to hang out with you here for a few minutes. Been talking with Mac Bookie about he's just going to get a Samsung 4K TV. It's on its way, and. It's going to be great. And the good thing about Samsung is that they basically put all their electronics into a separate box called the Evolution Kit, sometimes called the One Connect. And in any event, that has the video processor in it. It has the HDMI ports in it, so that when that stuff gets upgraded and has to be upgraded by hardware, you can just get one of these Evolution Kits, and they'll do it, I think, every year for 3 or 4 years. I'm not sure about that, but it's something like that for your TV, your model year of TV. You replace the one that's there now, and you've got the upgraded capability, which to me, that's a fabulous solution. I don't think anybody else in the market is going to be doing that, so... At least not that I know of. I'll find out next week. I'm going to New York for an event called CE Week, which is kind of a micro CES put on by the same people, the Consumer Electronics Association. And it will be, there'll be booths and so on. I'm also co-chairing a half-day conference called Your Next TV, in which we will be talking to TV manufacturers. Also, other industry heavyweights, industry people who are working on this new TV technology called Ultra HD. We'll also be talking about smart TV. I've got a couple of retailers on the panel, one panel, to talk about how they fit into the whole ecosystem. Earlier, Leah was talking about the new Kindle or the new Fire Phone, where you can take a picture of something and then go order it on Amazon. This is called showrooming. And I'm going to talk to the retailers about the problem of showrooming, which is one reason why retailers are having such trouble, you know, because people go into Best Buy or Video and Audio Center here in L.A. or Value Electronics in Scarsdale, New York. And, you know, they look around, they decide what they're going to get, and then they go buy it on Amazon. And the brick-and-mortar retailer loses a sale. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't buy stuff online, but there are some advantages to brick-and-mortar retailers, in my opinion. One is a personal relationship. Plus, there's somebody you can call and say, hey, I need to do this or that. They can also offer extra value by offering services like calibration and installation, stuff like that. So there's a place for brick-and-mortar retailers, and I would hate to see them disappear altogether. Also on the one other panel is going to be Jim Wilcox from Consumer Reports and David Katzmeier from CNET to talk about the role of the reviewer in the whole process. And I'm going to be moderating that panel as well, being a reviewer myself. These guys are my brothers. So it's going to be loads of fun. Hey, Dr. Mom, good to see you. And Sarah Jane UK, yeah, I'm always happy when you're here hanging out in the chat so we can chat. Mac Bookie says TV is released in the UK on Wednesday. You mean that Samsung you're talking about? That's also a curved screen. And it's, I think you said it was a 70-inch, 78-inch, something like that. That's a nice size screen. I will be curious to hear your impressions of what you think of the curve. Even at 78 inches, to me it seems to... encourage a solitary experience where you are.
Well, hell yeah, that's why I watch TV. What's wrong with that?
Well, you know, unlike audiophiles, who are a kind of a solitary bunch, and they sit there and they listen very carefully in the sweet spot, TV or home theater, to me, seems more of a group activity, a communal activity. You gather your family, your friends, you watch the World Cup or whatever. But with a curved screen, that I think that tends to discourage that, because anybody not in that center sweet spot is, you know, missing. The geometry looks weird, and if you're far enough off axis, you won't even see part of the picture because you're right looking at the edge of the curved screen.
I don't notice that unless they're curving it more. I don't notice that with my screen. The curve is so slight. It's just a few percentages. It's really more for aesthetics. Because, I mean, we play. I've seen my son play video games with 10 people at the same time on that screen.
No kidding. Yeah. On that OLED.
Yeah.
And they like it fine. Well, then maybe I'm off base.
Well, I just think it's not that big a curve.
Mm.
It's such a minor curve.
It's kind of minor. It's a minor curve. Yeah. I will grant you that. Yeah. And LG curved sets are even less, believe it or not.
Yeah.
They're just barely curved.
Right.
You know, and okay, so that's fine. So, yeah, the MacBookie is getting a 78-incher, which should be lovely.
That's nice. I didn't know they made them that big. That's nice. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Wiggs in the chat room said he asked about TVs last week. Ended up going with a cheapie that Redhead Chad reviewed on Before You Buy, the Scepter. I had never even reviewed any of these tertiary brands. Scepter, I think, is a store brand of Best Buy. I'm pretty sure it is. That or Insignia. Anyway, it's in that league. If Chad thought it was great, then cool. That's great. It's definitely inexpensive. MacBookie says he wasn't a fan of the curve either, but it's such a large TV that it really didn't make much difference. That may very well be true. And as Leo says, you know, it's a very slight curve, and I'm probably making more out of it than I need to. So, okay. Slap me up the side of the head. Marsworm, during the Amazon Fire Phone thing, they even promoted showrooming with the Firefly button. I think that's... I don't like that very much myself. I don't know if Leo's still along here.
You know what?
Here.
I don't care because...
You don't care about showrooming?
Best Buy doesn't have long to last. But...
what about any brick and mortar?
But think about it. If you're going to buy a 78-inch TV, you probably want to have it delivered. You don't want to have it mail ordered, I would think.
Yeah, I agree. What about the personal relationship with the retailer? I mean, if
all these retailers suck so bad that there is no personal relationship. Now, if they do a personal relationship, then you're not going to showroom it, right? All it does is puts the onus on the retailer to give you a reason to buy there. And by the way, this is the other thing that I think Amazon's going to say lets us off the hook. We have an SDK. So Best Buy could create an app that reverse showrooms.
You
could use the Firefly app, the Firefly button in a Best Buy app, and say, well, how much is this at a Best Buy? Or you could write a price comparison app. You don't have to use the Amazon. There's an SDK.
You know, that's a good question. That's a very good point.
I'm sure that's why they did it, because otherwise I'm sure they prefer that you buy it on Amazon.
Right.
Right.
This conference I'm going to next week, we have two retailers on. One is Value Electronics in Scarsdale, and that's like a one... You know, it's a one outlet place. It's a one building place. You know, it's kind of more of a neighborhood
place.
But
see, they're going to have service. They're going to have relationship. They're not, you know, I think it's bad for Best Buy probably, but I think they're getting what they deserve. and if you give good customer service. Anyway, Scott, we got to run. Thank you.
My pleasure.
See you later. Bye bye.
You betcha.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. If it's got a chip in it, you call that number. You ask me a question, make a comment, make a suggestion. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Let's not forget our fabulous website, home to our fabulous chat room, techguylabs.com. You can go there, get a link to the chat room, but you can also get a link to each and every of our 1,093 shows. Most of them have audio and video. so you can watch or listen. And we've divided it up not only show by show, but hour by hour and question by question. So you can go right to it. If you hear something and say, I got a better answer than Leo, you can go right to that question. You can hear the question, hear my answer, and then comment and add to it. And I'd appreciate it if you do that. You can also vote comments up and down. So I hope over time that makes it more and more valuable. Always free. You don't have to subscribe. Don't have to pay anything. Don't even have to give me any information. I don't want your email address. Just visit it. TechGuyLabs.com. Back to the phones we go. Robert, listening on the great KFI in Los Angeles. Hi, Robert.
Yo. How are you, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Good. Thank you. I have a question for you. I have a laptop. I have a laptop that's about 2 years old. Of course, it's accumulated a bunch of things on it, and so it's starting to run slow. So
we call that bit rot.
Bit rot.
Yeah, it's not literally rotting, but it feels like it.
Yeah. But I've got things on there that I can't replace, and I want to do a factory refresh thing without losing everything.
You're gonna lose. And so this is a
separate drives.
You can. You can. You know. Then you'll have your old cruddy 2-year-old install. It's next to a brand new, fresh, speedy install. And if you need to get over to that stuff, you can. There's also uninstaller apps that claim they can move a program. The problem is the way programs install on Windows is not just putting, they don't just put one application file in a folder. They put stuff in the registry. They put stuff in the Windows directory. They spew stuff all over the drive, and it's impossible to know exactly what they've done. In theory, they make a manifest of everything they've done, and the uninstall program can go through that manifest and undo it all. Or if it wanted to, I guess an uninstall program could go through that manifest, gather all those changes, and reapply them to a new install. But in my experience, it's very hit or miss. Sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't. What are they, programs that are no longer available?
Yeah, and there are ones that were downloaded, and I don't, you know, I install them, and then I don't have the codes anymore,
yeah,
stuff like that. But my particular laptop has dual drives, you know, with 2 750s in it. I thought, well, maybe I could set one up as the brand fresh run.
Do they show up as two drives, or they show up as a single drive?
They actually, yeah, it does show up. I mean, when I go to control, properties, I see two drives there.
But it's all a C1C drive? This is common nowadays. You see a C and D. Okay, good. Yeah, you could move everything that's on the D drive now to the C drive, and then use the D drive as a separate install.
And I would go to my boot and say boot to the D first instead of the C.
Yeah, you could do that. That might be the best way to do this if you really have to keep those programs alive. I mean, the absolute best way is to see if you can find them. And but this is a common problem. People ask me this a lot, and that's why you don't see clean installs very often, because I can't afford to lose that thing.
Yeah.
That program that I got, and I don't remember where I got it, or they don't make it anymore, or I don't have the serial number anymore, or whatever, yeah.
Is there a program that helps, like, separate off and partition things out, or just I should just try to do it?
Well,
I can change my boot sequence.
If you're sure that... first thing I would do is go into the Windows partitioner and look at how the drives are allocated. A lot of laptops use dual drives as a single drive in RAID. I have an Acer that does that. If that's the case, then this is definitely not recommended. But if they're really truly two different drives, and C is just that physical drive one and D is just that physical drive two, and you can tell that in the partitioner. You also want to look and make sure that the D drive isn't – the second drive isn't where the Windows installer is and all of that stuff. So you don't want to blow anything away. There's sometimes hidden partitions. This is – in other words, this is a – this is a – not a bunny slope. This is a black diamond tip. Okay?
Okay. Well, that'd be
you got to know what you're doing here. Then you don't need a partitioner because you already have you got the two drives.
Right.
Make sure you get everything off that D drive because – then you're going to install Windows on the D drive. The problem is the dual boot. You need a boot manager. Windows, in theory, will allow you to do a boot manager. But my experience is that it tends to want to have only one copy of Windows on any given machine.
That's what I was wondering, too, whether my recovery disks will notice that and say, hey, you're trying to make a separate copy of Windows.
Here's another option the chat room is suggesting. And if you can do this, this would by far be the best way to do. Mm-hmm. Which is to take the existing install and turn it into a virtual machine. So what you're going to do is you're going to use something like a VMware, and you're going to turn the entire disk. I think they do this. It's called physical to virtual, or P2V. It will take take the existing Windows install and make it a single giant file, a 20 gigabyte file or whatever it is, which you can then boot as its own or use in a virtual machine, actually, which is probably what you want. You'll be able to use it in a virtual machine. So if you need to run those programs just run in a virtual machine and that'll install. I think that's probably the best way to do it.
And they would like run virtual, like you could toggle back and forth and both be running?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, and I've got 8 gigs. Should that be enough for a Win 7?
Yeah, just barely.
Remember you do that? Barely, to do both of them?
Okay. You have 8? No, you have more than that. 8 gigs RAM.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was trying RAM, yeah.
Yeah, 8 gigs RAM is fine, yeah.
Okay. It's because I do trading on the...
You have some special... Yeah, your special trading. That's actually a good way to do it because you also... The nice thing about a virtual machine is it's kind of secure. You can make a copy of it, put it somewhere. If it gets corrupted, you throw out the old one and reuse the new one. There's lots of reasons why a virtual machine is a way to do this. I would investigate VMware. Use this whole idea of turning a physical drive into a virtual machine is a great idea. That probably a lot easier. That's not a black diamond now. We're one step down from black diamond.
Okay. And I would do that with the things that would be – I can run it a little slower, right? Because obviously
– Not much. But virtualization in modern Intel processors is supported in hardware. It does a context switch very fast, so it's really very close to full speed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. I think that's a good – I think for you that's a good way. So these are trading programs. They're specialized – proprietary programs. Yeah, that's exactly where you get into trouble, where you just can't, they don't want you to move it. The last thing they want you to do is move it.
Right.
They're probably very expensive, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I have one other question, but I didn't.
Sure,
didn't
sure, sure.
Screens.
Yeah.
You know, in my, I've got a Galaxy Note 3, which has, like, I think it's 1920 resolution. It's got as much resolution as a big HD TV.
Yeah, it does.
That seems amazing to me, and therefore, why is it? They can make that for a few $100 for the screen.
Well, the size of the screen is exactly why. If you were willing to watch a 6-inch TV, you'd be set. But you want the problem is you don't. You want a 60-inch set TV, and that means a bigger process and a much more expensive panel. Yeah, these are. You know, we've gotten really good. The LG G3 is. Quad is UHD screen on a sick 5.5-inch screen. I mean, it's so many dots per inch that it no longer matters. Anything anything more than that, you couldn't see it if you had a microscope. It's ridiculous. They're gone. But that's because there is a much larger market, isn't there, in these handhelds. They're selling 100 times more smartphones than they are big screen TVs. So the economy of scale kicks in. Yeah, this Note 3 is quite amazing. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, it is. I've been happy with it. And
good.
It comes out.
You probably could.
I like the screen.
It's just a matter of time before you do your day trading on your smartphone.
Yeah.
I think that's really the future. That's what I was saying at the beginning of the show. These aren't phones. This is your computer. Increasingly, this is the computer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I hate losing my voice because what I lose is expressiveness because I can't. If I stay in this range, I'm fine. But as soon as I go up or down, so everything is kind of monotone. It's a monotone. So here's what I'm gonna start sounding like Clint Eastwood. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the number. Claudia on the line from North. Is this North Edwards, California? Hi, Claudia.
Hi. Yes, it's North Edwards, out in the desert.
By Edwards Air Force Base.
Yeah, north of Edwards Air Force Base.
Got it. Okay.
So, hence North Edwards.
Yes, that makes perfect sense.
I have a question about, my son wants me to combine my cell phone with the internet so I'd only have one bill. And it didn't make any sense the way he was wanted me to do it.
Aren't sons wonderful? I bet my mom calls other tech guys with the same thing. My son has this crazy notion.
And it's probably a good notion, but I don't know.
I don't understand what he's asking me. He wants you to combine your cell phone and your internet. Yeah, so you have internet from From whom right now?
From right now, I have it from Wild Blue.
So you have satellite internet?
Yeah.
Yeah, and how are you? Are you happy with that?
It's all right.
Yeah, you know,
nothing.
Yeah, and where you are is kind of remote, so you probably can't get cable or telephone internet, right?
Right.
So the only other choice would be, and this is what your son's going for, is you can get a device that gets its internet from the cell phone company, from Verizon or AT&T or whoever. So, but the real question is, because of where you are, can you get high-speed internet on your cell phone?
I don't think so. I don't know. What he wanted me to do was get a smartphone.
Yeah, but so
with unlimited.
Yeah, and no, I understand what he's saying, and it would be probably better than the satellite internet you're getting, but mm-hmm. It may not work in your neighborhood. What you'd have to do is find out which cell phone carrier provides good 4G internet in your area. Okay. He's probably thinking T-Mobile because T-Mobile's the last man standing. T-Mobile and Sprint, the only two that offer unlimited. All of them otherwise have a fairly serious limits. Of course, you have a limit with Wild Blue, too, so
mm-hmm.
That's nothing new.
But I have my cell phone right now is a track phone.
Right, so you don't know whether you can get high-speed data because your phone doesn't do it.
Yeah.
So you have to find out. I mean, the worst way is to go to the websites for Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile. Those are the four big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the coverage maps and see if North Edwards has what you're looking for is 4G or LTE coverage. And I'm 4G or LTE. Those are the high-speed cellular internets. And, in fact, they're probably faster than Wild Blue.
Uh-huh.
And cheaper.
Yeah.
And you don't need a dish. And if you find a company that does have good 4G or LTE coverage in your neighborhood, then you would go to that company and say, I want to get a home, a wireless router for home using that.
Mm. Well, I have a Belkin router.
Yeah, but that's connected to Wild Blue. So, I would check, because you're near, Edvin Dunn's right, he's ex-military, he says, you know, Verizon makes a point of getting good coverage near military bases.
Mm-hmm.
So since you're near how close are you to Edwards?
From the base, I'm about 2 miles from the entrance.
Excellent.
But the actual base itself is more like 15.
But they probably have a cell site in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So I would start with Verizon. And you know what you could do is call the Verizon or go to a Verizon store and tell them exactly what you just told me. I would like to use your service for my home internet service.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have high-speed coverage? What kind of speeds can I expect to get in my home? Almost all of them will say, you can try this for 2 weeks, and if it doesn't work, bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
And then you should check the pricing, because you already know, because I know Wild Blue will give you that information, how much data you use every month.
Mm-hmm.
Because Wild Blue caps you. You know, they have fair usage restrictions.
Yes, I can use 10
gigabytes a month?
Yeah.
So 10 gigabytes, if you really used all of that, might get expensive on Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use 5 or less, 5 or fewer gigabytes a month, that's actually a pretty good choice. Your son is right. It would probably save you money. It would certainly get you better access, especially uploads, which means you could Skype, which you probably can't do very well right now.
I don't know. I've never tried.
Does your son want to Skype with you?
No, he just lives in the trailer behind mine.
Oh, he wants to share it.
Yes.
Oh, well, you put your son to work. You say, yeah, well, I'll do it if you find out how it works and who's to do it with.
Mm-hmm.
He wants, it's not for you, it's for him.
It's for both of us, but yeah. Yeah, I know.
Mom, your internet's so slow. Would you please get better internet so I can borrow it? Oh, yes. You're a good mother. You're a good mother. You know, one thing you could do is go to the PX at Edwards and say, who has the best cell phone coverage around here? Because they sell phones to the Air Force men. So
mm-hmm.
you could ask them.
And I have people who have access to the base.
Yeah, so and if you have neighbors who use smartphones, which probably they do, if you anybody in your area, ask them what they use and what kind of speeds they get.
Okay.
And that's another place to look. You're just trying to figure out if there's anybody who offers high-speed internet over the cell line, you know, towers in your mm-hmm. neighborhood, and then you want to get the one that has the best. And your son's probably right. It would be better service at a probably at a lower cost.
Mm-hmm.
The most expensive kind of internet is satellite, but unfortunately, a lot of people in rural areas are stuck with it because you don't have cable TV, right?
No, nope. I don't.
And this, and you're too far from probably the phone company. The phone, you have to be within a few miles of the central office to get DSL.
I have Verizon telephone, but they don't do
the high
DSL internet out here.
Because you're too far. Yeah, you're too far. Yeah.
And
so ask the neighbors if they've been using anything like this. I bet you they all have Wild Blue or something like it.
Well, there's Wild Blue and a couple others, so...
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want this... There's, you know, DirecTV and Wild Blue are the satellite providers. If you can avoid satellite... Nowadays, 4G and LTE, these new high-speed cellular technologies, are getting so fast, so good, that they compete with Wild Blue.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you should make your son do this.
Well, I'm going to.
I think if he's going to benefit, say, okay, son, you're going to the...
He runs around more than I do, so...
Yeah, exactly. Say, I'll do this, but you got to... This is what Leo says. You have to find out who has the best LTE in our neighborhood.
Okay.
And then what the cost would be. And I bet you, see, he's sharing your Wild Blue now?
Yeah.
So the total is you and him. So I would check and see how much, because what he may say, oh, great, now we got lots of bandwidth. I can start downloading all those movies from the internet, and that may not be practical. You know, he might want to watch Netflix, for instance, and you can you can blow through your data caps if you watch Netflix every night.
I imagine.
That's a gigabyte a night. Be 30 gigabytes a month if you watched a movie every night.
Right now, the movies I'm watching are on disc.
Yeah. No, that's right.
Shove it in my computer and
that's
I'm
right.
a movie.
Yeah. Well, good luck and get him to do it. You're an awfully nice mother. Leo LaPointe, the tech guy. Wait a minute. Need New IRC says, why aren't you checking for them? I'm kind of busy right now. I'll get right on that. Why aren't you checking them, new IRC? Why aren't you? The big old jet airliner has brought Johnny Jet to us. I'm surprised he's not in Porto Alegre or Sao Paulo enjoying the World Cup. Did you ever consider doing that?
You know, no, I'm not a big fan of huge crowds and stuff.
It's
on my bucket list, the World Cup game, but...
I told Lisa, when we retire... We're going to go to all the big sporting events, the World Cup, the Olympics, Formula One. We're just going to the Super Bowl. We already did the Super Bowl, but we just got to – it's you're right. It's big crowds, but it's an excuse to go to some very interesting places too, right?
Sure. I would love to go, but it's not going to happen this time around.
No. In fact, if you didn't plan this a year ahead, I think it's not going to happen. We do have friends who are down there, and they're having a blast.
Last week I was at Delta Airlines. I was traveling a lot last week, so that's why I wasn't on. I was in Puerto Rico. I was in New York. I was in Atlanta, Chicago. But in Atlanta, I was there for Delta, and one of the executives, he's Brazilian. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm going every weekend for the Cup. He just flies down because they fly for free. Gets on and goes to the game and comes back. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Exciting. Johnny is our world traveler, our travel guru. JohnnyJet.com is his website. And each week he joins us to help us use technology to travel better, or at least to dream of traveling better. I think a lot of us is just a dream. So what do you got for us this week?
All right, well, I've been getting a lot of questions. When's the cheapest time to buy tickets to Europe? It's not going to be cheap right now for the summer, but except after usually around August 19th or August 24th or 25th, the prices usually dip. So if you can wait till then, and this pretty much goes for everywhere because that's when a lot of kids go back to school.
Exactly. That's when summer ends for school kids.
It's not like when I was growing up, it was after Labor Day. So those are the magic dates.
So that's what we did last year. We went in September and October, and in a lot of places, that's the best time of year anyway. If you're coming to San Francisco, September and October, absolutely the best weather.
And same with Europe. It's the best. Yeah. The crowds, you don't have to wait in long lines, so yeah. I would definitely wait till then.
Tourists wear shorts in July in San Francisco, and they're freezing. They're universally
they just, know.
You see them on the corner chattering their teeth, go. But if they came in October, they'd be burning up. It's really hot, and it's sunny, it's beautiful.
I'm with you, and it's like that in Europe, too.
Yeah.
So, all right. So I tweeted you earlier today a music video. I don't know if you saw that, a travel video. And that, this went viral last week. And it was, if you're stuck in an airport, this guy spent the night in Las Vegas.
This is the funniest video I've ever seen. He decided to do, I guess you call this a lip dub, where you take a song. It's lip syncing. You take a song and you make a video of the song. In this case, it was the very
Celine Dion's version
of the famous Eric Carmen song, All By Myself. He's in the airport. He did this overnight, like all by himself.
I know. I guess he put his bag on the moving walkways and his camera on top of it, tied it, and it's pretty funny.
Nutty. Yeah, I really enjoy this. Everybody should see this video.
You don't have time to look at it now, but you know, everyone should just check it out. I tweeted it. So you can see it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I have a great travel app for today.
Okay.
So have you heard of WordLens?
WordLens. Google just bought it.
Did they?
Yes. It's an amazing app. In fact, you see it in the Apple commercials. You won't see it anymore in the Apple commercials because Google now owns
it.
Yeah, but that's not bad. That just means they make it free and it's going to show up probably on Google Now and other things. Tell us about WordLens. I think it's an amazing app.
It's a brilliant app. What it does, it translates printed words from one language to another just using your smartphone's video camera. So you don't have to be online. The bad news is it's not cheap, and you do have to buy a language, so English to Russian or...
Well, it
or
will English be. I think it's free now. It will be free. Google's going to give it away. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So, because it was $4.99.
Yeah. But what's neat is they try to match the font. So if you point it at a sign in a foreign language, it on your phone screen, it's the same sign in English. It's weird. Speaking of weird, here's this guy in the airport singing. So he did this with his iPhone?
Yep.
All by himself in the airport.
It is.
Wow. It's Celine Dion's music, so on the radio you can't tell, but this guy doesn't look like Celine Dion. Let's just put it that way.
No, and he's not an actor or anything like that. He's just...
He's bored to tears. And by the way, you've never seen such an empty airport. This must be 4 in the morning. Everything's locked up. That is the worst feeling, to be stuck in an airport overnight.
You
feel like Edward Snowden. All by himself.
This guy felt pretty good.
Got creative.
All right, so I got another app for you then.
Yes, sir.
How about All Trails? Have you heard of this one?
All Trails. No, what is that?
A-L-L Trails.
Okay.
This is for people who like to hike. So it has over 50,000 trail guides across the USA and Canada. I think almost 2 million people use it. And there's user-generated reviews. And it's for all different fitness levels.
It looks like National Geographic is a sponsor.
They're involved, yep.
Yeah. Wow, that's really great.
So, you know, if you're traveling and you want to go for a little hike, you don't know where to go, you can just download the app.
Hey, good news, Android and iPhone. I always feel bad because things like WordLens, iPhone only.
No, the WordLens is actually iPhone, Android, and Google Glass.
Yeah, then you know why, because Google owns them.
That's right.
Yeah, All Trails hiking and biking. Oh, that's neat. This is a good area of the country to have this. I'm going to have to download this and install it.
For sure.
Yeah. In fact, they're talking about places in our neighborhood right here. Yeah.
I just got a deal that just came in. San Francisco, Hong Kong on American, $860.
Round trip.
That's a great deal.
I've always wanted to go. That's on my... Oh, for August.
You've never been to Hong Kong?
No,
you got to go. That's one of my favorite cities. Top three cities in the world.
Is it? It's going to be smoking hot in August, though.
It will be hot.
That's why. It's really cheap to go there in August.
But I love going to Hong Kong.
Really? What's your favorite thing? Is it the food? Is it the shopping? Is it the views?
I love the food. Plus, it was the first place I ever went to internationally. So you have a little soft spot.
I do.
I just felt alive. I was like, oh, my God. I finally got the monkey off my back for not traveling. I used to be afraid to fly, afraid to leave the country, afraid to leave the house. And so Hong Kong will always have a...
Isn't that great? Yep. Yeah, I think you get imprinted with the first place, the first international spot you go to.
It's just like another world.
Yeah.
But everyone speaks English, which is nice.
That's right. It used to be a British colony. And they play cricket.
They do play cricket.
You get an excellent gin and tonic at Raffles. JohnnyJet.com. That's the place to go for Johnny. Follow him on Twitter at JohnnyJet, Instagram too. And he's off and about in 3 days. Is it a secret destination?
It is. Two destinations this next week.
Do you get, come on, right. You must get sick of this. You must say, can I just stay home for a
Well, on
month?
A day like today, which, by the way, is my favorite day of the year, the first day of summer, which I
what?
Just rode my bike.
Today's
to the
first day of summer?
Yeah.
I'm taking off my pants. Holy cow.
I played volleyball this morning, went for a swim in the Pacific. I mean, it's pretty tough to leave this place.
What, do you live in Venice Beach, Santa Monica area? What are you?
I live in the South Bay, Hermosa, Manhattan.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Doesn't get much better.
It's always sunny in Southern California.
Well, not always by the beach, but today it's very sunny.
Thank you, Johnny Jet. Talk next
Thanks
week.
For having me.
Have
Take
a
care.
Safe travels. We'll talk. We don't know where he'll be. You never know with Johnny. He's a world traveler. More of your calls right after this. All right. Nathan Staten getting a little overexcited. Just calm down, Nathan. It's all right. Calm down, our musical director. What is this, Heather? You know. I see you nodding your head to this, bobbing along.
Sabotage.
Sabotage. Heather's my musical expert here. Because you... this is for that woman whose teacher was sabotaging her computer. We'll dedicate that to her. Yeah. Yeah. Heather, for her day job, because you don't think she can make a living doing this, do you? manages rock bands, right? Or you kind of get them, you do stuff with them.
Assistant to the manager.
Assistant to the general. All right.
But yes, it's very fun.
What fun. Especially if you love music. And I know you do.
Yeah. And I get to go to all the parties.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the Beastie Boys. John and John, I'm hitting puberty. It's hard to believe after all these years. John and Dayton, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, except for my voice cracking.
Happens out there, though.
That'd be terrible if my voice were to change again. It doesn't change again in your 50s, does it? Did you suddenly go high again? That would be bad.
Might be a good opportunity for an iPhone app.
Yeah. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm having troubles with my Windows 8.1, and seems like there was some sort of hard drive failure or something where it's asking me now for my Windows key.
Oh, how nice.
Which, yeah, so they don't provide that. I've gone through the box. I've gone through...
you got to call Microsoft on this one, I think. It's an Asus I see on the screen.
Yes.
Asus laptop.
Q501.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, remember pre-Windows 8, they put a little sticker on the back of the thing.
Right.
They don't do that anymore. So I think there is a way to recover. I think your key might be stored in on the hard drive. So there are software techniques. Somebody's telling me the Belarc Advisor might do that, BELARC.
Well, the wonderful thing about this is that it's interesting to think that anybody would want to steal 8.1, but more importantly... No, really.
No, I know. But, you know, Microsoft, they're very paranoid. They always think the best of their products, so...
Well, oh boy.
That's why there's heavy copy protection on these things. Not one, not two, but three different forms. And, of course, if it fails, then you know, you're kind of out in the cold. Obviously, you didn't go steal a copy of 8.1 and put it on this Asus. It came with it. So that's why one of the two places would be Microsoft or Asus. But so you're saying you can't run anything yet, or what's going on?
Well, it keeps blue-screening me, and, that's not cool. I paid for it.
Did you ever...
I ran...
When you log in, do you log into your Microsoft account?
Unfortunately, I do, but I do have a second account, you know, that's not got administrator abilities, so...
No, that's fine, but it will... one of the things Microsoft does is saves your product key under your Microsoft account.
Uh-huh.
So you can, on another machine, log into your Microsoft account and see what your product key is.
Well, using Belarc, I did, you know, pull the serial number that they're providing.
Yeah.
But being that they're so paranoid, apparently they've blocked it out now, saying that it's a blocked key. So.
Oh, wow.
But Asus is coming back saying, we're going to offer you know, that in 2 hours. And then they revised it to 72 hours.
Yeah.
And we're currently on 7 days as of the 18th. So I'm coming down to somebody. And I'm getting mixed messages from them. They don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, because this is not supposed to. You know why? Because this isn't supposed to happen. Microsoft's supposed to save the key in your Microsoft account. The boot firmware, the UEFI firmware, saves it there. So you should, in theory, just be able to do a restore from the restore partition. You know, you have on Windows 8, and this is a nice thing, they have these abilities to just kind of reboot holding down certain keys, and you can or do the restore from the menu, and you should be able to restore the whole thing. What you're saying is that the keys reported by the UEFI, or the key that you've typed in, these keys are blocked.
Well, we didn't have a key, so I asked a friend to take a look at it. And
your friend may have done you a disservice.
Maybe he has all of the information in the box and everything. So
I'm wondering if your friend did something that triggered a Microsoft block. The key is built into the system, so a reinstall, and it sounds like you need that since you're blue screening. A reinstall should just reinstall it without any questions.
Right. Well, I was attempting to get through it without having to do that because I have so much on here now, but that's going to disrupt things a bit. But nothing I can't recall.
Well, they have a refresh. They have a refresh. It doesn't delete data.
Okay. All right. It's actually running right now.
I'm a little worried that your friend stole your key. Your friend's a good friend, trustworthy?
Yes.
He didn't use your key on another machine?
No. He has his machine all purposed and, you know.
So it sounds like it is. This is why Asus is puzzled, because it's not supposed to happen. But if you had a hardware failure, if, for instance, the UEFI got corrupted, this could be it, too. So it's working okay now?
It's working. It just can, when I leave it, it seems to know when I leave, and then it pops that message up. Strange. He's turning.
Oh, man. This is frustrating. You know, Microsoft has really tried to eliminate all of this by providing these the system refresh and the system restore built in and putting the serial number, especially when, you know, it has to be obviously you buy it from an OEM, but when you buy it from an OEM, the serial number is built in.
Well, I wish they would have put a little bit more emphasis on functionability and the actual program instead of worrying about losing it, because they might have had a product that would have been worth protecting that key. And, you know, who knows? Maybe they put too much emphasis on that. It looks like
Microsoft's always been paranoid. Going back to the days when, the very earliest days of Microsoft, when Bill Gates was kind of a nerdy guy, and he would go to user groups. This is back when Microsoft's only product was a version of BASIC for the IBM PC, and he'd say, "You're stealing our BASIC, and stop stealing the paper tapes." And it was literally paper tapes, he said people were stealing. And ever since, from that day, and it's the corporate culture Bill Gates created, Microsoft has been more than almost any company, more even than Adobe, who is notoriously paranoid, really fearful of getting ripped off. And I think they overprotect their software. And you really have to contrast that to something like the Macintosh operating system, which doesn't even have a serial number. You just install it. Now, of course, remember, Apple makes money in hardware. Microsoft made money in the operating system. That's why they were so paranoid. And I'm sure Windows is heavily pirated. But the irony is all of these protections don't ever slow down pirates. They only slow down honest people. Because the pirates just disable it. You know, they know how to get rid of it. It's the honest people who get hurt by copy protection because they can't. It's like this. It's not working, and I don't have any recourse, and I have to wait a week for Asus to fix it. This is fortunately not common, and I don't know what the solution is. We'll put some links to various forums. My Digital Life has a whole section on doing this, but I would caution you because what you don't want to do is make it worse. And it sounds like Microsoft's deactivated the key, which means it sounds like you have to go hat in hand to Microsoft at this point. I'm going to take a break. Come back with more of your calls. Hour 3 of the Tech Guy Show coming up. 8888 Ask Lee. We're going to talk about computers in the next hour, the internet, home theater, smartphones, digital photography, all that stuff. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also reach us via Skype. If you call Skype out, it's free. The website techguylabs.com. You'll find a link there to the chat room, but also all the questions and answers from all 1,093 shows. That's a lot of shows. 888-827-5536. Google bought. Actually, it's interesting. Google bought Nest. This is it's like a little one of them little Russian nesting dolls. Actually, Google bought Nest, which is the company that made the smart thermostats that got on the thermostats actually on the internet and knows what the weather is and knows when you come home, has a motion sensor, knows a lot about, maybe way too much about you, really, if I think about it. But that way saves you money because it doesn't turn the heat on when no one's home. And if it knows it's going to be a cool day, maybe it it turns the heat on a little bit in the morning and that kind of thing. They bought, Google bought them as, the, I guess, the foundation for their new home automation stuff. They've always wanted to be in the home automation business, as has Microsoft, as has Apple. In fact, Apple just announced whole bunch of stuff. Well, now the Nest division of Google has bought Dropcam for $550 million. More than half $1 billion. Dropcam's an interesting company. I actually like the Dropcams a lot. We have six in our studio. You can go to twit.tv, our website, twit.tv, the studio website, the podcast network, /Dropcams, and see the Dropcams. We've got six of them. In fact, we use one to monitor the front desk. These are Wi-Fi enabled cameras. They use a lot of bandwidth, but the HD camera, we can actually see who's coming in the front door. We have a receptionist, but it helps if the receptionist's not there. We can see what's going on out front. We've also got drop cams in the studio, so you can see what our studio looks like and so forth. These are really high, I think, really high quality cameras. They do a really good job, and we've been a big fan of Dropcam for some years now. Makes sense. Google just acquired them. Well, again, it's they say it's not Google, it's Nest, but Google owns Nest, so odd. But I guess the idea is this is Nest is going to end up becoming the home automation division of Google, is my guess. And it makes sense. Cameras are a big part of that, aren't they? The idea that you can see what's going on. So, interesting. Interesting. Google's on the move. Everybody's on the move. Amazon announced their new Fire Phone. Talked about it at the beginning of the show. Yeah, Apple has announced new software for iOS and for desktop computers, and they will presumably announce new hardware to go with it in the fall. They did announce some hardware this week. It kind of didn't get a lot of attention. But they've announced a newer, low-cost iMac. The 21-inch iMac, which is the kind of the least expensive iMac. And the iMac is kind of the center of the Apple desktop line. They make the Mac Mini, haven't updated it in a while. They make a Mac Pro, which they just came out with a new, a very expensive one. But the iMac is the kind of the bread and butter desktop computer. They now have a 21.5-inch iMac with a slower processor for a budget price of $1,099. Okay, it's budget for Apple. It was $1,200, so you know that's budget for Apple. I guess it's good that they have a relatively less expensive iMac. Most people are not going to want the 21-inch screen, I would guess. But if you can't afford the bigger one, that's I guess the next best thing. They also have a Mac Mini, as I mentioned, which they haven't updated in ages, and that's their least expensive Macintosh. The Mac Mini actually. You can actually get a $600 Mac Mini. You provide your own keyboard, mouse, and monitor, but it's a decent machine for $600. I hope they update that. That's really, to me, that's the low-cost Mac. And I'm a fan of Apple's computing. I really am. I think the desktop computers are, for many people, a better choice than Windows. I've always said Windows for office, Mac for home. That's changing, though, isn't it? I don't say it a lot anymore because more and more people are using tablets. Whether it's Mac, you know, Apple tablets, the iPad, or Android tablets like the Nexus 7. These are very good choices for a lot of the kinds of computing you do. And increasingly, the phone has taken over. And that's what I think that was the thing I took away from the Amazon Fire Phone announcement was they talked all about the features of the phone, the dynamic perspective screen. It's not 3D, but it's kind of 3D-ish. And the Mayday button and the new user interface and all, but they didn't mention that it's a phone at all. They used the word phone, but they didn't talk about making phone calls at all. And I think increasingly that's what this the little thing in your pocket, that smartphone in your pocket, you probably use already more than any other computer, right? And increasingly that's going to be the computer, I think. It already is in Japan. where there's not, I guess apartments are small, there's not a lot of real estate, but for whatever reason, for many Japanese, I'm told, Japanese people, the phone is their computer, and their phones are much more sophisticated as a result. 8888, ask Leo, what do you think? Is your next computer a phone? Is your phone really a computer? 888-827-5536. Our first call of this hour, Larry, Sherman Oaks, California. Hi, Larry. Leo Laporte here.
Hi there. I will talk about DVRs in a second, but a few years ago I asked you about a solution. I was recording a lot of programming on Reel, and now I'm using SD cards, so I'm quite happy about that.
On Reel, like reel-to-reel tape?
Yes, yes.
Well, it's about time you moved on.
Well, there are a couple of companies that make some recorders that are especially friendly to the blind.
Yeah. Ah, I see. I get it.
Yeah. And so I get 200.
Did you get the Zoom? Is that what you got?
No, it's a Plex Talk or a Bookport.
Okay, good. All right.
I get 270 hours on an SD
Ooh,
card.
Wow.
And
that's
I
great.
Only got six on the open reel.
Yeah, that's great. And what do you record? Lectures? Or?
News programming.
Oh,
I'm a news junkie.
Audio.
Yeah, audio of U-verse and Dish Network
so you,
and over the air.
You record TV, but you only want the audio.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. You don't need the video. Yeah.
Right. But we will. But speaking of video, though, of course, U-verse gives me a DVR.
Right.
And it's got, what, 380 hours of storage,
right.
But I can't really access it very well because the menus don't talk. I guess only Comcast is coming up with something later this year for talking.
That's a sad thing. They're way behind the smartphones and the computers mm-hmm. now, which really have very good technologies for people who can't see the screen.
Right, but the thing is that haven't we taken a major step backward with the DVR? Because if you're a news junkie and you want to record an event, you just want to, you know, leave the house, punch the button and record all day. You can't.
It There's no just start recording now.
No, because it stops when the next event starts.
Right, right.
And that really threw me for a loop one day. And I didn't know that. And I was like, well, what happened is only recorded 2 minutes of CNN International and it stopped. Like, oh, no.
The show ended. What are you? You wanted another show?
Yeah.
What are you, crazy?
Wow. I mean, I couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
And there is a record button on the thing.
Look, you know, the DVRs from the cable companies, I've said this for years, are terrible. The user interface is poorly designed. They're not software companies, and they're not very good at making the software interface. They really should add accessibility for blind users. They really should be more user-friendly, but they're terrible.
And beyond that, of course, I would love it if I could find a Linux interface, a console for this unit, because I'm strictly in Debian Linux.
See, wouldn't that be great? Because it command line's easy. You can read the command line. You type the
that's
command
right.
line. Yeah, that's a great way to go.
That's right. As I know that can be done. It's just nobody's thought to do it. I know there is a app for U-verse for the Apple phone. But I tried that for a month, and all that flicking and gestures, it was just too much.
TiVo will work on U-verse, I think. Hey, we got to take a break. Hang on. We'll talk more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking about DVRs, digital video recorders. You remember in the early days of DVRs, it was TiVo. And there was a replay TV, but TiVo just owned the market. And unfortunately, what happened is all the cable companies came up with their own kind of not as good DVRs, but it came with the cable subscription and blah, blah, blah. And you didn't have to pay a monthly fee for the, you know, the guide, blah, blah, blah. So people ended up, you know, I'm surprised TiVo's still around. Replay went out of business, sued out of business by the TV networks because Replay made one little mistake. They put a 30-second skip button on the remote. Which means it's really easy to skip all the commercials. Boom, 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 boom. And so they got sued out of existence. TiVo did not do that. They had a secret 30-second skip, but it wasn't public. And so they survived. Unfortunately, I just checked for you, Larry, and it doesn't work with U-verse.
That's too bad.
Because that TiVo has a manual record, for instance. You can just say, record till you run out of drive space. And they have so many nice features. I don't know what their accessibility features are like, but it's pretty nice. However, it's not available to you, so I apologize. So what is your question? You want to record?
Well, I use the DVR as a scratch pad the same way as I did the VCR, and then I copy the stuff to another recorder and yes, edit out the commercials and the stuff I'm not interested in and keep what I feel is the finished product.
So what you really... Wow, I'm so impressed with what you're able to do. That's great.
You know, except for this DVR. I mean, I have a UVerse tech who showed me. He said, "Oh yeah, you." He showed me the sequence of buttons to push, and it's not foolproof.
No.
And now,
you know what I'd look at is Myth TV. This is a Linux DVR solution. You'd have to build your own set-top box, basically.
I think some already come built.
Yeah, you can buy Myth TVs. Yeah.
Yeah. Are they command line?
That's a good question. I would guess because it's open source and it runs on Linux that there must be some way to command line it. I would look into
I'm going to a lug meeting tonight, so I'll
ask. Oh, perfect.
Ask.
They have their Myth wiki, mythtv.org/wiki, that probably has everything you'd
But meanwhile, I guess in Europe, what, the recorders actually do shut off when the event is over versus when the guide thinks it's going to be over. That's what I had heard. So if a ball game goes into the 13th inning, it keeps recording or something.
The TiVo I have, they say every time you start a recording, they say, "Would you like to record a little extra?" Because nothing ends, you know, very few live events, ball games, Academy Awards, end on time. But they're not smart enough, and maybe this is something they've put into the signal in Europe that we don't have here, to actually know when the event's over. That has to be provided by the broadcaster, and I would guess that there's some system in Europe to do that. I don't think we have such a system.
No, I don't think so either, but it would seem like the broadcaster could send, you know how like the network sends, I think, line 19 for bulletins or something in the picture.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking, by the way, at the Myth backend. There is a command line.
Good.
I think for somebody like you who's a Linux guru, you know, I wouldn't really recommend Myth for a normal person. But if you know Linux, you're using Linux, Myth is probably the best choice. You'd have to get a compatible tuner card to work with it. But then you'd have, because it's open source, you can get under the hood, you can customize it to your heart's desire. And I can guarantee you that there is, on Myth anyway, a record until you run out of time button. And since it's your hard drive, you can make it as big as you want. So the chat room says the system to indicate the end of a broadcast or the end of a live event does exist in the U.S. As you say, it might be in the vertical blank or in some part, invisible part of the broadcast. But Web8218, our chat room, says that does exist in the U.S., but the broadcasters may not be using it. This sounds perfect for you. Go to the lug meeting. Ask. Thanks, Larry. Nice to talk to you. Debbie in Calabasas, California. You're next. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm going to take you off speaker.
Okay.
Okay, so I have a question. I'm going to buy a birthday present for my son, and I'm trying to decide on what model to get. I started at $500 range, and looking, and of course you always get bumped up, but so my first question is basically, if I'm looking at the Apple MacBook Air, the 13-inch.
Nothing in the $500 range at the Apple store.
Exactly.
I'll tell you that right now.
Right up to $900.
I think you can get a screen for that, maybe. I think the MacBook Air is a great choice. What grade is he?
Oh, no, he's an adult. He's an electrician. Yeah, it's his birthday.
And has he indicated an interest in any particular thing, or are you just doing this?
Yeah, no, his wife said he would like a computer. We just bought her a laptop.
Aww, aren't you sweet?
Well, they're wonderful.
You're
so
very generous, because these are not inexpensive. But I think I would, you know, the issue is you can get the base model MacBook Air for $900 now. They dropped it.
Right.
And that's an excellent computer if he doesn't mind the 11-inch screen. That's the only negative. It's a pretty small screen. And many people I know who use it, in fact, the editor-in-chief of Macworld magazine uses an 11-inch Air and loves it because it's so light, so portable, small enough you can use it in an airplane, but it's a full computer. It's powerful. So I think for $899, that's a great product. That's a great choice.
And nice would you go with the 256 or the 120? Oh, because to stay at the lower price, you have to stay at the
128. Yeah, $899, you're going to get 128 gigs of storage. That's enough for a lot of people, unless he's putting movies on it.
No, he's using it for some business and some, personal.
128 gigs is fine. You just have to manage. You can't just kind of blithely go along and say, I'm going to fill up my drive with 800,000 songs. You have to kind of manage it. But it's really plenty, unless you're, as I said, a pack rat. If you're hoarding, then you're going to have to get an external drive. But it works great with external drives, too. The other thing is, if you're buying it at the Apple store, he can easily bring it in and say, this isn't right. I want to get something different.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. And does it matter if you buy it at the Apple Store versus the Best Buy?
Yes, buy it at the Apple Store.
Okay.
It doesn't save money to buy it at Best Buy, and you lose all the advantages of having the Apple Store.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. The people that I do know. Okay.
No reason to buy it at Best Buy because you don't save money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So, the other thing that I was looking at was a HP Split, 13-inch. So it could be a tablet, so you could take it apart, and that's $700.
Well, but that's a fundamental question, and he may have a strong bias towards Windows or towards Apple. You got to.
Well, he's had the all Windows, but I overheard him talking, and they were saying, "Oh, Apples are great." Neither of them have Apples.
Okay.
So I think he's
the new computer you bought for your daughter-in-law, was that a Mac or was
it? It was a Windows-based.
Okay. I personally push Apples as much as possible for home users. A Mac is a very good choice, but sometimes, like you said, he uses it for business. There may be business apps that he has to have Windows for. So I would, get him what he wants, but what you're describing sounds like a great choice. And it will run Windows if he needs to. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You get Reward Zone at Best Buy. The Reward Zone. We were talking with Calabasas. Now we're going to go to Hermosa Beach and say hi to Steve. Steve, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yo, Leo.
Yo, Steve.
Always informative, man. I've just been enjoying being on hold. Just
that's a nice way to put it. hour and a half has been very informative.
Well, no, because I'm about to buy a GoPro,
and
I'm going to get the black edition because it will go to 4K. I probably don't need it now, but a year from now I might.
Yeah. I have the Hero 3 black. In fact, I used it yesterday zip lining. So, yeah, it was great. Put it on the camera, and I thought, well, if I die, at least there'll be good video of it.
I was just in Maui and wish I'd had it there because what an amazing place.
So the GoPro is a little camera about the size of a box of matches. It's a kind of an amazing thing, and it comes with a waterproof enclosure. So you can take it underwater. If you go to GoPro.com, you'll see lots of videos taken with GoPros. In the most, they give it get to every extreme sports person. I did the other day. I was driving down 101 yesterday, and some guy had a GoPro glued to his hood. You've seen that, Heather? The guy driving down with a GoPro on his hood?
No, but I saw motorcyclists
on the helmet. I have the helmet mount, so I put it on the helmet while we were ziplining. But, yes, it does 1440 ultra-high def. Now, you sacrifice frame rate a little bit when you go to ultra-high def.
Right.
I didn't, it's funny. When we were ziplining, I said it's a 1080p 60 frames. Because it's fast motion, I thought the resolution 1080p is going to be, HD is going to be fine, but I want the higher frame rate. You sacrifice the frame rate if you go to a higher. So they have 1440 and then ultra high def, 4K.
Gotcha.
I don't shoot, I haven't shot a lot of 4K with the 3, but it's capable of it. I'm not sure what the frame rate is. It's probably 24p. It would look good. You got to choose the right setting for the right event. So if you're moving around a lot, if it's sports, you might prefer a lower resolution and a higher frame rate. You also choose the field of view. So they have a super wide angle, very fisheye look. I usually use the middle ground, not the most telephoto, but kind of the middle. And that gets a pretty good field of view, but it doesn't look too distorted. It's I'm really blown away by the GoPro. It's rock solid. Highly recommended.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, that leads me to my reason for calling. I'm redoing my whole TV home theater receiver, and I'd kind of like to boot Fios out the door. And I checked DSL Extreme. They don't have a solution for Hermosa. Do you have somebody else that you like that I can get good quality high speed? Fios has been throttling my account.
Really? So, a lot of us who don't have Fios is the Verizon fiber optic solution, and a lot of us who don't have it look at people like you with great envy, thinking, wow, I wish I could get that. How fast are you getting? What are you paying? And what do they throttle it at?
I've been getting about 6 megabytes.
Oh, that's terrible. You're supposed to get 50. What are they promising you?
Well, they promised 15, but what it is every time they introduce a higher speed, they want you to pay for it, and they slow you down so you will pay for it. I keep going on DSL reports, and it gets slower.
Oh, that's sad. Oh, that's frustrating. And
it's a brand-new computer. I don't think it's me. But I would like to replace it, and I need a new receiver. I'm going with a new TV. So I'm wondering, you know, I know you like the Onkyo receivers. I read some of that on the forum.
I do.
And I'm wondering what features I need. You know, I see AirPlay, I see Bluetooth, and all these different things.
I don't use a lot of that stuff. They, you know, nowadays when they make an AV receiver, they load it up with every possible feature.
Right.
And you just have to decide, well, what am I going to use? For instance, I've got Pandora and Spotify on my both my Denon and my Onkyo receiver, but I never use it because it's better for me to use the smartphone. There have been plenty of ways I can access that, and that's the least... because remember, the processors in these things are slow. They're computers, but not great computers. So almost always you're going to choose the Roku or the TV or some other device to do that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't worry about network services on there. Bluetooth might be nice if you have a phone and you want to play the music from your phone into your stereo.
Right.
But that may not be something you'd ever do. So you just have to decide, is that important? One feature, the most important feature to me, maybe to you, was the number of HDMI inputs. That's because I have so many devices, you know, and I don't want to have an added switcher for my HDMI. So I got one with 7 inputs, and that's been enough. But you might want to count your inputs. Are you going to use a Roku? Are you going to use an Apple TV, a Chromecast, a PlayStation? It starts to add up after a while. You'd be amazed how many, a Blu-ray player. Now we just have 5 right there. So it's not hard to get a lot of devices, and then you have to add your cable box or your satellite box. I think Fios is pretty good, but you're going to pay the price for high-quality Fios. And if you're not willing to pay the price, the problem is that they're no different. I don't think there's anybody better than them. Your next choice is your cable company. That may or may not be better. Fios should be the best connection you have in the house. It's certainly the fattest pipe. I would not recommend DSL at all. It's not going to ever come anywhere close to the speeds that you are expected.
Okay.
So it's going to be cable. It's going to be cable or Fios, and you may decide cable's not a good idea.
Right. Okay. That kind of wraps it. And then on TVs, what should I even go for a 4K? It sounds like that's what you were recommending. But
no, that's what I don't know if Scott or I, either of us, would recommend a 4K. The 4K is coming. It will be great, but I would wait. We're so early on. It'd be like buying an HD TV in the first couple of years of HD. You definitely can wait. They're really great TVs out there right now. Lots of good choices in the LED backlit LCDs. I would stick with that. You'll save money. And then in a few years, when there's content in 4K, we haven't figured out how we're going to deliver that content. It's so big. It's not coming in over the internet. Well, I guess it is, but you'd have to have the top-of-the-line Fios. That's why I wouldn't get rid of the Fios just yet. You might want to bite the bullet and say, you know what, I'm going to pay $100 for my internet access, but I'm going to get great internet access. Fios is not a good choice if you're price sensitive. If you say, well, I just want inexpensive internet, then you should get DSL Extreme or something and understand that you're not going to get more than a couple of megabits a second, but it's going to be very inexpensive. The other side of the equation, and for some of us, this is where I pay a lot for my internet access because reliable, stable, high-speed internet access is very important to me, but I'm the tech guy. So I pay an awful lot for my internet access. You kind of have to decide which camp you're in. My experience is that Fios is going to be, if you have it, is going to be your best choice. But you're going to be paying. You know, get ready to pay a lot for your internet. The good news is it's fast enough that you don't need to use the Verizon Fios TV solution. You can get most of the TV you want, especially since you're in a metro area. You get most of the TV you want over the internet, and the live stuff you get over an antenna. I think that's a good solution. In fact, I'm jealous you have it. I'd get that in a heartbeat. We're going to talk to Bob in Newark when we come back. The GizWiz 2, our gadget guru coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And that's the GizWiz, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, Dick DiBartolo. He's also a TV guru. Somebody just in the chat room said, I just found out that Dick saved the Match Game and wrote all the questions. Well, yeah. He's like,
duh.
Yeah, duh. And
blank.
blank. dumb Dora was so dumb that when she found out Dick wrote the Match Game question, she blanked. See, I would never. I know. I wouldn't. You're
no,
good at
okay.
that.
That's okay. You're,
it's okay. The master has given me high praise. Dick joins us every week not to talk about the Match Game or Mad Magazine, although that's always a good conversation, but also to show us a gadget or two. What do you got?
Well, I have a gadget that turned out to be so much fun. Have you ever used one of those pads that you put on the dashboard and then you lay your phone on it and the theory is that it won't bounce off or slide off or you put change on it?
Okay. I did, and it went straight out the window, so I...
Okay. So I got a thing called Grab Pad, world's greatest sticky pad.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to do a video for... the GizWiz. And in fact, I did. So I took it down the boat and I said, you know, a boat is a great test because we go over wakes and stuff. And I got to the boat and I said to Dennis, you know, this is not fair because my dashboard, it's totally flat and people's car dashboards are
angled. Well, that's the problem. They're very rarely flat.
Right. So then from Stupid Labs, I thought, let's mount it vertically. So I put it on the dashboard vertically, straight down behind the steering wheel.
How sticky is that pad?
Okay, so I stuck a phone on it, and I didn't want a chance losing the phone right off the bat. So I figured I'll put it glass side down toward the sticky thing because it'll have a pure solid,
right,
slick surface.
Right.
So we did that. Went over some waves. It stayed there.
Wow.
I figured I'm going to flip the phone around, and it's my old Droid X. And the Droid X has a big hump at the top where the camera is.
Well, that's going to be terrible. Yeah, it doesn't have a flat back.
I put that on, revved the engine up, did some circles so that we create our own wake, went bouncing over the wakes, and Leo, the phone stayed there the entire time.
Wow.
So this thing is called, it's pretty neat. It's called Grab Pad. And at Home Depot, it's $7.99. And at the company website, it's $5.99. But I don't know what they charge for.
So this isn't, this could be for anything.
For anything. You know, very small pads. You could certainly phones, change on it, keys. And
you can just, it doesn't make something sticky, right? You can.
No, you know, I peeled it off. Just to make sure there was nothing on the dashboard. I checked the phone. There was no residue on the phone.
Wow.
So it's sticky on both sides. I accidentally dropped it on the rug, so it picked up a lot of stuff.
Ew.
Washed it in the sink, and like the instruction said, it came clean.
Wow.
When it dried, it was sticky again.
You know, I use for my iPad this from Deke, DEKKE.net, the Slope, which is the same idea. They say it's the same material that geckos. You know how geckos, the little lizards, it's crawl
across.
Now
you put
the
that on your dashboard?
Well, no, you could because it's got stick them on the bottom.
Yeah, right.
But it's
okay.
Really just an iPad stand. Well, actually, could do anything that's got a flat back, and it actually does a pretty good job. But it's the same thing. If it gets dirty after a while, you have to wash it off. But then once it's on there, it's on there pretty good.
No, that is pretty. That.
Oh gosh. Never mind.
Okay. So that's
$14,
and then the iPad is an additional
$500. Yeah. No, it does pretty well. Does pretty well. So there must be some new space age material these guys are using.
I think so. And at their website, I saw that they're also making phone cases lined with it, so that it's also a great shock absorber.
Yeah. Just don't make my bouncy ball that I sit on at.
Well,
because.
I'd love to see you go bouncing with your ball attached.
So. Oh, yeah, if you only made one side sticky, and then you sat on that side, you could just bounce down the street.
Yes, that would, yeah. Yeah.
You've got me thinking, Mr. Dickie D. Dick's website, gizwiz.biz. That's the place to go to see all the different gadgets Dick mentions on this show and on his podcast, The Gizwiz, which is on every week on our Twit Network and when he appears on ABC. And, you know, it's a great place for gadgets. And you can also play the What the Heck Is It contest, see a close-up image of a gadget. Just a few more days to play. And win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, right? Because it ends at the end of June, right?
Yeah, at the end of June, yeah. You win the August issue of Mad.
So go to gizwiz.biz. Dick, stick around the Giz Fizz right after the radio show on the Twit Podcast Network.
Perfect. See you I'll then. Be here.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time for one more call. Rob is on the line from Newark, New Jersey. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Quick question. I got a Samsung Galaxy Note 2.
Yeah.
And I have a problem where it's, you know, when you put, like, say, your user ID, or sometimes maybe it's not so smart, it's like your password or something, mm-hmm. Where it auto fills it in. And I have all the settings to not remember things, but it seems like it's doing that. And even on websites, when you're going to the internet, you know, that it'll. You know, you put in the first couple of letters,
yeah,
and it'll bring up something that you saw in the past. Is there something that I'm missing to get that to not remember that information?
You don't want to. You want to clear your internet history. Do you want to have it never remember, or do you want to be able to clear it from time to time?
I prefer to have it never remember. I clear never the remember. History myself a lot using the privacy settings,
right?
But it seems like it, some things it's remembering, like say my user ID for like. Your bank account.
Yeah, it shouldn't be filling that in. In fact, the bank account specifically, the banks typically will specifically tell the browser,
honestly, like,
don't remember this.
Say like an airline site that you go to and, you know, you put in your user ID, it's remembering it all the time. You just have to put in, is there anything to take
that? Well, the first thing I would do is, you know, there are other browsers you can use on that Galaxy Note. I don't use the Galaxy Note browser, the one Samsung provides. I use Chrome. And I'm sure that you can turn that off in Chrome. I wonder if it's the now somebody's saying it's the keyboard, not the browser. Are you using a tablet or the Galaxy Note phone?
The Note 2, the phone.
The phone. I'm kind of puzzled. Actually, I'm not sure.
It does it a lot. It remembers.
Yeah. You know,
stuff
well, and you know that's a convenience that autocomplete. And I'm not sure where you turn it off. This sounds like something specific to the Galaxy. Try Chrome instead as the browser. I prefer the Chrome browser. If it still remembers it, then it may be the keyboard that's remembering it. I don't like the Samsung keyboard either. I use a keyboard called SwiftKey. See, this doesn't happen to me on my Galaxy Note. So I'm thinking it's but I don't use either of the Samsung apps. So my suggestion is try non-Samsung apps, the non-Samsung SwiftKey keyboard and the Google Chrome browser. I bet you it'll go away. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.